Welcome to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Cybersecurity, progress, and best practices within the federal government. Here's your host, Jim Fleisig.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Jim Fleisig. During today's show, we will discuss critical issues facing government and industry leaders in securing cyberspace. With me on the show are Jerry Davis, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Security at the VA, Brendan Good, the Network Security Development at the National Cybersecurity Division, Homeland Security, Mark Orndorff, the Director of Mission Assurance and NetOps at DISA, David X, the Principal Architect at Red Hat, Albert Kinney, the Director, Defense Cybersecurity Capability, Enterprise Services at HP, and Ken Cartson, VP Federal at McAfee. Let's get into the issues and talk a little bit about what's going on out there. Let's start with Jerry Davis over at VA. Jerry, tell us a little bit, but give some examples of where you see some progress being made in securing cyberspace over at the VA.
So, I would have to say nationally, a lot of progress, just in our front end when we talk about awareness. Just overall, if you think about some of the cybersecurity bills that we're trying to push mm-hmm. through, some of the work that's just going on nationally and interacting with private industry, trying to make that private industry, public industry, or public activity work together. Progress that I think is really unprecedented. You know, cybersecurity now is it's a global issue. You hear about folks talking about it all the time. It's encouraging to me to see that people are actually and institutions are actually taking it serious.
Yeah.
Right. So despite the fact that, we don't have a bill yet that has gone through, the fact that there's a lot of focus on it and progress being made on what cybersecurity means financially from an aspect also of national security is very, very encouraging. I would say also some of the other areas of progress stems around agencies, and VA is one of those, around understanding what's taking place in cybersecurity in your own agency.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is awareness of what's taking place and then maturing your agency. I've seen a lot of maturation, having been in a number of different agencies, but seeing maturation over the years where agencies are getting better and better at cybersecurity defenses, and understanding what the threats look like and then reporting those out. I think the third area that I would have to say, again, it kind of goes along the line of awareness. You hear a lot about numbers and statistics on attacks. Are up and things of that nature. But I think that's because you're getting those numbers because we're more aware and the technology is getting better.
So we're detecting.
Better. So I believe that there's maybe the numbers are going up, but we're more aware of them and understand the threat more, and the technology is getting better. So that progress around that is very encouraging as well. So all the way around, it's getting better.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the awareness issue, I mean, it's rare that you pick up the newspaper these days and there's not an article somewhere talking about the cyber threat or cybersecurity or something happening. Brendan Good over DHS. DHS obviously plays a important role in the cybersecurity space. And as Jerry mentioned, we got a number of bills bouncing around. We'll see who does what when and so forth, but we'll let the political system figure that all out. But the National Cybersecurity Division plays a key role for the country. Can you tell us a bit some progress that you guys are making?
Yeah, there are several areas that we've made progress over the past couple of years, focusing on the .gov environment, mm-hmm. the federal civilian space, and implementing the programs like the Trusted Internet Connection Initiative, and the progress that we've made there in terms of helping consolidate down our internet access points, getting a better understanding of our networks, the threats that are facing the entire federal enterprise, the deployment of the Einstein capabilities, giving the government a really good insight into what's happening, the threats that are they're coming into the federal government space itself. So getting better situational awareness that's going on there. And also helping departments and agencies, through the compliance with the Federal Information Security Management Act, helping departments and agencies understand and improve their security postures, mm-hmm. and really leaning forward towards the continuous monitoring side of it as well. Some of these programs that put capabilities back into departments and agencies' hands to allow them to deal with the vulnerabilities and threats that are facing their enterprise. Outside the .gov environment, I think also an important set of progress we've been making is the increased partnerships, not only with in the federal government, with the Department of Defense, I think is an obvious one that a lot of people are familiar with. The memorandums of agreements have been put into place, the collaboration that's going on there, but with other departments like Department of Energy, we've been doing a lot of pilots with recently on how to advance some of the capabilities capabilities that are out there, partnerships with the private sector as well, some of the pilots that have been going on to help them better secure their enterprises, as well as kind of an international engagement. Yeah. Some of the work that we've done in the, I think the important conversation around, you know, the legislation is obviously right. one. Right. In lieu of that, though, there's also just the information sharing frameworks that we've been helping to define, putting programs out there that people within the environments that we are today can take advantage of. So greater enabling that sharing of attributable right. Or actionable information out to private and public is right. very important for us from that standpoint. Yeah. And the final piece is the NCIC, the Watch Operations Center that DHS has a floor that brings in, you know, not only federal government partnerships, but also the private sector as well, to be a part of kind of this analysis and cyber center.
Oh, great, great. Hopefully we can drill down, we'll have time to drill down on some of those things a little more. Ken Cartson over McAfee. Now, McAfee, we think of as one of, you know, when you think of McAfee, you think of information security. I think that's sort of synonymous. You guys, I know, play a large role. What are some of the areas where you're seeing progress made in helping government agencies secure cyberspace?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our largest focuses over the last year has been to, you know, how do you leverage visibility, control, and drive down costs? One of the biggest issues in the security area is the number of providers that most organizations have today. You know, if you look across your infrastructure, there's probably 100 different providers of security tools right. and technologies. And if you look at, you know, if you go back to the 90s, for example, and we had different ERP systems, we had payroll and we had HR and we had a plethora of different technologies to help us. But over time, we started to consolidate that into one platform. And that's what we're trying to do at McAfee and integrate, you know, whether it's a McAfee product or it's a solution that you have in your infrastructure that's not McAfee, integrate that together into a single platform that McAfee can help you provide more visibility, more control, and absolutely drive down costs
yeah,
over time.
I agree with that. I mean, we've had this discussion, too, numerous times. You know, it seems like over the last 20 years, we've been doing Band-Aid approaches. Something, we have an attack, and we create a solution for that attack. Then something else happens, we fix that. Now we've got just dozens and dozens of different products and solutions out there.
Exactly.
And it's one place where cloud makes sense. Step back in the cloud world and say, hey, you know, is there a holistic solution? And do we really need all these individual things out there?
Absolutely. You have a new type of attack, so you have to have a new technology, and typically you go after a new provider for right. that technology.
Right. Terrific. Mark Orndorff over at DISA. DISA, again, I guess we think of DISA play a major role in the DoD world for addressing cybersecurity. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the progress you have going on over at DISA?
Okay, great, thanks. First, start off with something that we almost take for granted at this point, which is the strong identity credential that we have across the Department of Defense. And it's such a foundational capability. We've almost eliminated the use of passwords within the Department of Defense, and that becomes such a great building block, not only for the security and cyber benefits, but also for information sharing, building out enterprise capabilities, and like you just mentioned, moving to cloud-based capabilities. Having that foundational building block in place so that we know who is part of the Department of Defense, we have the ability to strongly authenticate and leverage that as we build out and expand capabilities. Like I said, we almost take it for granted at this point, but it's a key building block. The other sort of more exotic and maybe more interesting set of things to talk about are where we've leveraged our industry partners and built out defense capabilities within the core DoD infrastructure. So I think you sort of highlighted it already, where we used to have spot solutions somewhat disconnected from each other, locally managed and locally implemented. What we've done over the last few years is take those same technologies and build it more into an enterprise approach where we're leveraging those technologies to give us global situational awareness and also global capabilities for response action. So we can implement, in a lot of cases, not all the cases that we would like, but in a lot of cases, we can globally execute a response action in the face of a new threat or emerging threat. And instead of going through an orders process and asking people to locally do things, we're able to globally take actions that we can implement under cyber command's authorities.
Terrific. You know, and I agree, Mark. I actually taught cybersecurity at the graduate level for 17 years on weekends, and I pushed and believed that if you can get the identity management piece nailed, right. and the authentication down, a lot of things become a lot easier.
A lot of things
I don't mean just the
easier.
Identity right. for people, right. people, things, devices, switches in the network and so forth. Get that piece nailed down and a lot of other things fall into place a lot easier. David X over Red Hat. I think open source solutions and so forth. And I do hear the argument all the time, you know, that it's easier to secure open source solutions because you can see the bits.
Yes.
I don't know if that's how you would view that, but how are you positioning Red Hat to support government in cybersecurity?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And that's totally true. Everything we do is out in the open. And that, as a result, forces everybody that writes that code to do a better job to make things much more secure. And two of the big things that we're really excited about that we just have come out with in the past couple months that are related to cybersecurity, the first advance that we have goes back to January this year, where we came out with Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization. And that's our virtualization technology that includes a technology called SVERT for secure virtualization. SVERT allows you to isolate virtual machines from each other as well as from the hypervisor. So if you are able to exploit the underlying hypervisor or the guest, all the guests and all your data is protected. And that's all built on top of SE Linux, which was developed by the NSA and Red Hat, and a lot of our partners have commercialized. So that's the first part. The second part that we're really proud of is that in May of this year, we came out with common criteria certification of that KVM SVERT technology on Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5. Yeah. And so not only are we saying that we're really proud of it, we actually taken it to the labs. We've had it validated so customers can use it with confidence in the government. And so we've done that for Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5, and in the very, very near future, we're going to have that for Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.
Good. Sounds great. Progress being made right across the board. Albert Kinney, when I think of HP does a little bit like everything, but tell us a little bit how the area you're focused on helping government with securing cyberspace.
Thank you, Jim.
Sure.
HP is looking at cyberspace in a very holistic way, trying to bring together all the elements of cybersecurity in a way that not only protects you from bad things that are happening out there, but also promotes the business value of what you're doing or the function that you're doing in government. We do this with our security intelligence platform built upon all the components that we have in the cybersecurity space. We start with identity management as our foundation. We put that together with our SIM solution through ArcSight. Mm-hmm. We're able to bring together a lot of the intelligence pieces both internally to the enterprise and externally to the enterprise through this ArcSight platform. So we have things like Tipping Point, which is a globally deployed group of sensors and intrusion detection systems that feed information between each other and back into the common understanding of cyberspace. So now the clients that have this kind of an enterprise architecture can bring together both the intelligence from outside and inside their own organization to further the mission that they're performing and derive more value from the investment they've made.
Yeah, terrific. I know our last show was on mobility, and we talked about some of the challenges around security and mobility. And we are looking at the holistic solutions now, and we all know as the kids enter the workforce, the security of the mobile devices becomes more and more critical all the time. Let's talk about priorities for the upcoming year. What are some of the hot things you're working on? Let's start with Mark Orndorff this time over at DISA. Mark, what are some of the things that are on your plate for the upcoming year, some of your priorities in cyberspace?
Okay, well, I'll pick up on what you just said. Top two priorities that we're working on within DISA. One is mobility, and the second is the cloud broker role that we've just recently been assigned from the DoD CIO. So both of those, even though they're not pure cyber projects or security-related initiatives, obviously they bring some significant cyber challenges. So we're definitely focused on building out a mobile solution that is holistic, looks at the entire architecture from the device on back, and builds out the capabilities that we need to properly defend and operate on a mobile platform. And the same for the cloud. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have a private cloud within DISA that we are responsible for operating and defending. And with the new role as a cloud broker, looking at how we extend into the commercial sector and still provide the security and the defensive capabilities in that environment. So, moving more into the pure cyber aspect, mm-hmm. some of the key priorities are the cyber situational awareness. And what we're trying to do there is leverage the infrastructure that we've put in place over the last few years and collect up, basically using every device on the network as a potential sensor, mm-hmm. a source of information for cyber, and building it in this shared environment the right set of analytics that will give us better ability to understand what the threat activity is on the network, what our potential vulnerabilities and risks are, and also tailoring that to specific missions and understanding how a current operational thread is either at risk or better defended. So right. that situational awareness and the ability to execute orders as we require capabilities in response to certain mission priorities. The last thing I wanted to mention probably is the most important, and that's the focus on the cyber workforce.
Good point.
What we've done over the recent years within the Department of Defense is leverage commercial certifications and commercial training programs, and we got a lot of benefit out of that. But I think we're shifting more to a traditional DoD focus where we've established joint training standards and we've started leveraging cyber ranges more than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. So instead of going to just commercial courses and getting commercial certification, that's still a key part of the cyber workforce program, but now we take our cyber workforce into a range. We put red team activity on the range and we actually execute missions with an active threat environment. And I think that's going to change the way we train and change the way we operate in the future.
Yeah, terrific. I know all the universities, all the local universities, their cybersecurity enrollments are skyrocketing, which is a good thing. So it's obviously becoming a hot topic. Jerry Davis, what do you think? What are some of your priorities for the upcoming year here?
Yeah, I almost have to go exactly with what Mark said.
Yeah, it's a problem following somebody. You just say ditto.
Absolutely. one of the things that that we're looking at very hard is at software assurance, mm-hmm. Security in the software development process. At VA, we do probably about $1 billion a year of software development. What we found is that there's a significant gap, and some of the issues that we have is just a lack of security being built into that software development process. So we're standing up a program. We're being very, very aggressive. We're working actually with folks over in the DoD side of the house to build a software assurance framework. We're also working with folks from DHS on what does that look like and what does that mean for us at the end of the day? How do we integrate that into the current software development process without making it too bulky, too heavy, and disrupt that process? There's going to be some disruption. But at the end of the day, we know that at the end, we're going to have much better quality product. So the quality for software developers, we're instituting also the idea that quality also includes security.
Sure.
So that's one of our biggest projects that we have going on right now. And again, the other side of that is the data analytics and big data stuff.
Good. Brendan Good at DHS, is there anything you can add to what we've heard so far as to priorities that you might have? I guess you look at a little different in the role you're in.
Yeah, I mean, I think they set a pretty lofty bar in terms of talking about priorities. It's hard for me to argue with either of those. And I would probably just lay into this fact that cybersecurity tends to be exceptionally reactionary.
Right.
So taking the time and spending the process to be strategic thinking from that standpoint, I think DHS in the past has tried to lay out kind of what's next, you know, the blueprint for securing cyberspace, work in terms of defining a cyber ecosystem. What can people do to start doing, take responsibility for distributed responsibility for cybersecurity, defining strategies around the engagements in the international space have been important policy type of documents that we've been helping define. I think that continues to be a priority as we look to the future where we want to take securing cyberspace. Personally, Einstein 3 is an upcoming effort for us that we're looking forward to turning on capability, the ability to actually not only identify malicious traffic, but now to start halting that traffic because it's coming in and out of the federal.gov systems. The continuous monitoring.
You're going to get to .com too, right? Because I'm tired of winning that lottery over there in Nigeria or wherever it is. And I keep sending them $100 every month. And I don't understand why I don't get my billion back.
Yeah, there is no doubt that a priority is how to provide better capabilities for the government to work with critical infrastructure, especially to be able to help them, enable them from what the government has from a knowledge sense so that they can secure themselves. The work that, going back to the .gov, the continuous diagnostics type work as well, putting the tools into the hands of the departments and agencies to be able to get the warning to prioritize the focus of where to put threat mitigation in, and when possible of known vulnerabilities, start putting in kind of that real-time defense against them as well. And Another important effort for us is the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, how to develop the workforce, not only for the government side, but for the private sector side as well. So I think we're all probably going to feel that pinch over the next several years as we're all competing for the same type of talent pool. So how do we put a how do we help with the development of a workforce so that we all can benefit from it?
Yeah, terrific. Yeah, that getting proactive rather than reactive. You know, I think people get proactive. The first time they clobber their hard drive on their PC and realize they can't get the data back is when they start getting proactive. But anyway, I want to hear from the private sector subject matter experts on this subject also. But first, we need to take a short break. You're listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Are you concerned about security with federal mandates to move to the cloud? Hi, this is Paul Smith from Red Hat, the most trusted open source company in the world. We work hand in hand with the open source community, making their innovations ready for government, from operating systems to middleware, from common criteria to FIPS 140-2, from the STIG to ICD 503. You'll get the assurance you need for your mission from Red Hat. Check us out on redhat.com/government. That's redhat.com/government.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help secure mission-critical applications that you depend on to run your agency's most vital operations by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. It's time for a new approach. Make security matter. HP.com/go/cybersecurity.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Jerry Davis from VA, Brendan Good from DHS, Mark Orndorff from DISA, David X from Red Hat, Albert Kinney from HP, and Ken Cartson from McAfee. We're talking cybersecurity. When we went to break, we had heard from our government guest. Let's hear priorities for the upcoming year from some of our private sector subject matter experts. Albert, over HP, how are you? What are some of the priorities you're addressing to help the government secure cyberspace?
Thanks, Jim. The overall priority for HP and security this year will be addressing complexity in the security problem. And we really view cybersecurity as a big data problem, and we're trying to bring together the tools to solve that problem through technology. We can't apply more people to the same problems over and over again. We really have to figure out a way to address this at the speed of cyberspace. So in doing that, we want to move from situational awareness all the way through command and control of the cyberspace environment, and then adapt that understanding of cyberspace to the missions and business processes that are being protected and performed so that we can amplify the value of those processes while we are still protecting them. We start right off with software assurance for our comprehensive threat analysis program aligned with Fortify as the automation component of that. In addition to that, we're working through a maturity model to address the need to combine network operations centers, mission operations centers, and security operations centers together so that every portion of the enterprise knows what the other portion is doing and can provide the right expertise at the right time, the right place. And we do that by bringing together all the components of our security intelligence platform with our identity management platform to operate these things in real time.
Yeah, sounds like the same cycle we went through with IT in general. You know, we push everything out and regionalize it and push it all, and then we bring it back and consolidate it. And same thing with security. We had all these individual solutions pushed out now. Now we're trying to bring them back and make sense of consolidated approaches. Ken Cartson and McAfee, what are some of the priorities you have for the year to support your government customers?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. So some of the, probably the three largest initiatives we have, and starting off with number one, is being able to provide our customers with additional situational awareness and actually being able to respond to events that are occurring. You know, if we think about the SIM market today, security information management, And the capability to pull all that data together and that big data, as was mentioned before. Today, it really just resides as big data, and we report on it. But can we actually take actions? At McAfee, we're integrating our global threat intelligence. So your IP, URL, file structure, reputation, and have the ability to actually know what's going on globally and integrate that with the events that you're seeing inside of your infrastructure. And we do that through our McAfee SIEM Nitro. Second is mobility. You know, the biggest thing with mobility is it's constantly changing. Right. It's erupted so fast and evolved so fast. We don't even know what the requirements are really going to look like in 2 or 3 years. Right. So we're working hard with our partnerships with the federal government to establish what those requirements will be over time so we can start developing to those today. Right. A lot of those requirements we've already sufficiently added to our ecosystem of mobility management capabilities. And then the third is cloud, enabling our solutions to be utilized from a cloud perspective. So taking our products, whether they're on the network side or they're on the host side, and they're utilizing EPO, for example, to establish that architecture so they can leverage it from a cloud environment.
Right. Yeah, I know that there's a lot of energy, too, around this concept of a first net or a government, a public network, wireless network for the government. And we'll see where that goes in terms of standardization and things like that, because, you know, it's a big challenge. We still have interoperability issues amongst all these platforms. So securing things that currently don't interoperate and have different types of encryption responsibilities, capabilities is tough. David Axe of Red Hat, what are some of the priorities you're looking at this year to push this ball forward, make sure things happen?
Yeah, well, I think, Jim, I'd like to actually talk a little bit about what Jerry was saying in terms of having security as a part of the software process itself. You know, at Red Hat, you know, we develop the code in an open way, and we do the common criteria certifications, and you know, to make sure that customers can run workloads on top of it. But the other thing that we do is, as we also enable developers by doing FIPS 140-2 certifications of our cryptography libraries. Mm-hmm. We've done that a lot with RHEL 5 and previous versions, and we're underway doing that for RHEL 6. And the benefit there is that instead of our customers writing code themselves, using their own cryptography libraries, they could leverage ours and leverage those certifications right away. And as a result, it allows them to get through their CNA processes a lot faster, run trusted code, and you know, to build on what Brandon was saying, is that, you know, it helps by baking the security into the software development process, you can go much more away from the reactive to be proactive and have that security built in.
Right. Yeah, I used to tell the story that it's like disappointing that we even have something that's called a firewall, because if the products were built secure to begin with and the software was designed securely to begin with, we wouldn't need a firewall to protect ourselves from the outside world. But anyway, let's do a little shift here, and let's talk about, we talked about progress, we talked about things that are happening. Let's talk about some of the challenges that remain, some of the hard things out there yet that we're still trying to accomplish. Let's start with Brendan Good this time over DHS. Brendan, what are some of the key challenges that you think you still need to overcome to get where you want to go, you know?
Sure, I think probably it's common challenges for all of us. One is the economic challenge, right?
Sure.
Not having security being the first thing we start to sacrifice when it comes to protecting ourselves, and as the budgets get tighter and tighter, that still is a priority area for all of us. The threats are evolving, becoming more sophisticated, becoming targeted in new ways, staying ahead of that and being able to deal with the threats as they emerge. So it goes back to, you know, how do you stop being so reactionary and after the fact in terms of dealing with the threats. Workforce development, you know, we are all going to be pulling from the same pool of folks. How do we build a larger workforce to be able to support all of our needs from that standpoint? And I think the last thing from my perspective is, in some areas, we are still emerging policy discussions. Right. You had brought up one about the engagements worth working with private and critical infrastructure sector.
Right.
You know, what does the relationship need to look like, and how can we evolve it to make it benefit for both sides?
Right. Yeah, excellent. This will be another one of these questions where, you know, is there something we can add on to that? Let's go to Jerry. Jerry,
yeah,
some challenges that you you see, and I do, that money ones, because despite, you know, I read a survey, I forget, it was of boards and CEOs and whatever, and when asked, like, all, like, some, like, a high percentage, like 90% agree it's a problem, but then we asked the question, are you investing heavily in it? The answer is the numbers drop off way off. It's because, you know, they're concerned about return on investment. their stockholders' equity, revenues, and cutting costs. And then when you throw security in there, you have a hard time of making that justification. But nevertheless, it needs to be done. Jerry, some challenges from your perspective.
Not far off really from what Brendan was saying. I think the number one thing for me that we continue to look at, it really is that workforce development. It's very, very difficult to get a good skill set today in cybersecurity. A lot of competition, whether it's between government agency to government agency or government agencies and private industry. When I'm talking to my counterparts at the big organizations out there, whether they be the Yahoos or the Googles or the McAfees, extremely difficult to get the good talent that's out there. Right. Colleges and universities as post-secondary education institutions are doing a phenomenal job in that area, but it's just not fast enough.
Right.
Threats are changing faster and faster. The technology is getting a little bit more complicated, and you just don't have the folks to deal with that right. fast enough. So how do we get those skill sets? How do we have the skill sets that we have? How do we get them up to speed, the people that we have, to deal with that is a tremendous challenge for us.
Yeah, I mean, the position of cybersecurity is so complex when you think of what you need to know. You need to know telecommunications, computers, multiple operating systems, mobile devices, switching systems and so forth. It's such a complex set of skills that define people that have the breadth of scope of those kinds of skill sets is extraordinarily difficult. Mark Orndorff, how about over at DISA? What are some of the challenges you have day to day that you're trying to overcome to get where you want to go?
Well, just kind of sum it up under the broad category called agility. And basically, what I'm talking about there is the ability to dynamically conduct military operations and still address the cybersecurity requirements. One of the things we've started getting some data points back on is that our ability within the Department of Defense to pass inspections is getting better and better. We know how to do what you need to do to comply with security standards, to configure systems properly, et cetera. But then when you go out on a military exercise, when an organization is actually conducting an operational plan in a very realistic scenario, a lot of those things go by the wayside. And to adapt and provide the level of IT support to the commanders that's required by that particular exercise, a lot of the security requirements are ignored or just not managed in the same way they are when we're doing an inspection. Right. So how do we get to the point where we can conduct operations and still address the security requirements is definitely a challenge for us. The second aspect of agility is adapting technology more quickly. I think many of you probably have heard that as we were going first into the mobile device area, DISA worked with industry and got a commercial device through all of our tests and all of our standards, and right about that time it was pulled off of the commercial marketplace and replaced by something else. So obviously that is not going to work going forward. So coming up with the processes so that we can build the security into the commercial development process, so as new devices are brought on the marketplace, they're ready to operate in our environment on day one.
Right.
Is definitely a challenge, and I think we're making great progress. We've seen, again, in mobility, where industry is already changing the way they approach the development cycle and adapting a lot of our requirements and requests for improvements into their development process. So I think going forward, we won't have that happen to us again, where devices is ready for us to use about the same time that's pulled off the market.
Right.
One last point I wanted to kind of circle back to my initial comment about identity. And where we've made great progress, I think, internally, what we haven't done so well is look at external partners and look at other sources of credentials to support the sharing requirements that we have on various scenarios that we might, whether it's disaster relief or military operations. So figuring out ways to better leverage other government identity credentials, industry credentials, as well as coalition partners is a key challenge for us.
Right. Yeah, excellent. Good points there. All excellent points. David X, how about from the Red Hat world, what do you see as some of the big challenges out there?
Yeah. When I go out and I talk with my customers, one of the biggest challenges that they run into is the CNA process. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big challenges there is that a lot of times every agency has a different policy of how to lock down systems.
This one's been around for a while.
Yeah, but we're making. But the good news, though, is we've been making a lot of good progress.
Good.
We talked about hiring from a good talent pool. It's, you know, if somebody learns one type of technology, does that really map to another agency's lockdown? And a lot of times it doesn't. So if we had a unified way to do that, I think that would be very, very helpful. And what we've done is, it's the National Security Agency has started an effort called the SCAP Security Guide,
right.
Which Red Hat is an active participant along with other people from the Department of Defense and civilian agencies have been working on this. And what we've done is we've come up with a way to develop policy that could be addressed by multiple agencies. And so right now we're looking at having DISA is looking at using the SCAP Security Guide as being the foundation for the STIG for RHEL 6 and the
right.
JBoss products.
Okay.
And NIST is looking at it for using it as the U.S. government security baseline or configuration baseline. And a really neat factoid is that this project has been only around for 5 months now.
Okay.
We've had the source code repository open for 92 days. And in those 92 days, we've had 430,000 lines of code committed.
Oh, wow, good. I mean, that's encouraging because since we've been doing the show over the years, the certification and accreditation comes up as an issue every single time just because technology is moving too quick. I mean, by the time you CNA the given version, the next version's already ready to roll out. So you're always working sort of a version behind. So it's good to hear we're trying to get some standards and consistency across government that can hopefully speed that up. Ken Cartson, how about some of the challenges that you see? What are some of the things you're really trying to get overcome here to get where you're trying to go?
Yeah, I think it's still really a lot of it over the next couple of years hinges on mobility. We think about the devices today that we're utilizing, and today most of us carry an iPad or
right.
or another type of Droid device, and it's another device that's
right.
in our briefcase or our backpack. But I look at my children, for example, and that device, if they have to go to the laptop or desktop, they're not going to use it.
Right.
So how do we secure this, and how do we
right.
think about it in terms of putting containers around our sensitive information and thinking about how that sensitive information transports to our home networks or to our corporate networks? And additionally, and probably most importantly, how do we manage those devices?
Right.
With the proliferation of all these mobile devices, probably the most important thing is that we understand what devices are on our network and who has control of those devices.
Yeah.
And the second largest thing, when we think about identity and access control, the government's come a long way. They're way ahead of private sector in most circumstances when it comes to identity control or identity access. But how do we merge that with cloud? How do we know who the user is when that government user or industry user goes to the cloud environment? Are we really sure of the identity of the person who's accessing the information? So recently, McAfee acquired a company called Nordic Edge, where we're trying to get ahead of the game when we think about identity and access management in cloud environments.
Okay, terrific, great stuff. Albert Canning, what's from your perspective? What are some of the key challenges you're trying to overcome at HP here?
Key challenges that we see in the market are the increasing levels of cyber dependency across both the critical infrastructure, government, and commercial sectors of the market. We try to address that by bringing asset to mission correlation for the enterprise. And that enables things like the identity management practice to show where all the people are accessing all the assets and have a trail of information that protects things from the inside. But in addition to that, understanding the whole cyber picture, both inside and outside the enterprise, and delivering a human-computer interface that's enabling decision makers to guide where their enterprise is operating globally and make decisions about the configuration, security, and partnerships that they may do with that particular enterprise.
Yeah, terrific. The good news, I guess, when we talk challenges is I think industry recognizes the challenge, especially with mobility. We've been talking, and I have been briefed on just dozens and dozens of different tech experiments and labs and prototypes, things going on with securing mobile devices. So I think the issue's obvious that it has to be addressed and will be. We're going to switch gears again a little bit, but before we do that, we're going to take our second short break. You're listening to Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help secure mission-critical applications that you depend on to run your agency's most vital operations by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. It's time for a new approach. Make security matter. HP.com/go/cybersecurity.
Are you concerned about security with federal mandates to move to the cloud? Hi, this is Paul Smith from Red Hat, the most trusted open source company in the world. We work hand in hand with the open source community, making their innovations ready for government, from operating systems to middleware, from common criteria to FIPS 140-2, from the STIG to ICD 503. You'll get the assurance you need for your mission from Red Hat. Check us out on redhat.com/government. That's redhat.com/government.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Welcome back to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jim Fleisig here with Jerry Davis from VA, Brendan Good from DHS, Mark Orndorff from DISA, David X from Red Hat, Albert Kinney from HP, and Ken Kartson from McAfee. We're talking cybersecurity. We've been talking about progress and challenges, and you know, I hear all the time that cybersecurity is not going to be solved solely by the government. It's not going to be solved solely by the private sector. It's not going to be, it's going to take a collaboration. So let's talk a little bit about some of the areas of collaboration opportunities to collaborate across government and perhaps with private sector. Let's start with Mark Orndorff. Mark, what are some of the areas you see where closer collaboration makes sense?
Yeah, a good friend of mine from NSA, Paul Bartok, coined the phrase safe on delivery. And I think that that concept as a collaborative goal between government and industry is key. We already mentioned the frustration with the certification and accreditation process. I think we ought to take that off the table and work better together up front so that we're building towards a common goal. Our evaluations and tests and the evidence that we collect is all shared and accepted by each other. And there's an opportunity here so that we can make things more efficient and more effective by better collaboration on what we're trying to achieve from a certification, accreditation, or just standard security profile standpoint. And the second part of the answer I'd like to focus on is collaboration from an operational perspective, where we better share information as things happen on the network. We've recently worked with the DoD CIO to stand up a secure sharing environment with industry for the defense industrial base. And I think that's just the starting point of some great potential, where in a classified or secure environment, we can start sharing in both directions what's going on, what we're doing about it, signatures, threat activity, et cetera. But definitely is an area that we need to continue to make progress.
Yeah, I like that first idea, too. Collaboration as the products are in development or software is being developed, because then by the time it's finished, you pretty much can be certifying as you go, you know, as opposed to have the product completed and then start a whole nother process up. Brendan Good, what do you think? What are some of the areas DHS is looking to do collaboration with other government and with the private sector?
Sure, I'll start with the government side of it. The first is there's a set of programs DHS is executing, leading. Mm-hmm. Examples are the Einstein program, right. Continuous diagnostics, and obviously there's a lot of relationships that have to be established across the government to be able to implement programs such as that.
Right.
The second is just leveraging the skills, abilities, and mission space that various federal departments and agencies have. I think you know Mark hit it right on with one example is the partnering with the Department of Defense on the engagement with the defense industrial base and how we can help share information and improve what we have and provide over so that they can use that to secure their constituents. Within the federal government as well, we take advantage of the resources that are out there, leveraging the energy labs, some of the technologies in development there, the work that they do not only for energy and defense and other sectors, working with the National Institute of Standards and Technology from a research and development standpoint, and obviously I think everybody's familiar with the relationships with DHS and DOD on various activities of threats, vulnerabilities, defense, things like that. From private or from a critical infrastructure side, the establishment of programs that allow us to do information sharing across broadly across critical infrastructure, learning that what's being learned in the different ones and enabling one sector to be able to share with other sectors as well has been an important program for us. I mentioned, you know, working with the Department of Defense as well with the DIB industrial base, defense industrial base as well. The last one I wanted to really point out was working with industry. It was telling to me when we did an industry day, you know, several months back, and one of the feedback was it feels like it's a closed door between government and industry, or right. at least from DHS and industry. Right. And I think one of the things that we are excited about is opening up the dialogue with industry, not from we're coming out to procure technology, right. but we're looking for feedback on what you've learned and experienced in, you know, protecting your own networks, protecting your own sure. systems Absolutely. That we should be benefiting from as well. So right. engaging in a more active dialogue of the capabilities that are out there and how we should be exploring that and defending ourselves as well.
Yeah, terrific. I know. And the industry issues are more complicated than they seem because there's a lot of, you know, proprietary information and intellectual property issues and things like that. And I know at Treasury we were concerned about, you know, threats in the financial community, but, you know, a lot of banks and financial institutions are not going to want to make public, you know, a lot of vulnerabilities. So when we actually went to anonymous reporting, the number of reports that came in, like, just skyrocketed when we put in place anonymous reporting capability.
Yeah, and I think we've seen a lot of shared accountability, shared responsibility across these sectors and with industry and ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's a team sport to protect the nation, right? And we are so intertwined. I think it's starting to move away from that concern about being very stovepipe and I protect right. myself and I'm good. No longer right. is that true anymore. Yeah. And I think we, you know, there are ways of using anonymous type of reporting to be able to make people more comfortable with sharing and things Correct. Like that. But I think there's a more palette for doing that sharing now.
Yeah. Good. Very good. Jerry Davis, what do you think in terms of when you look at collaboration with other agencies, with the private sector, with other maybe universities? How do you view that issue?
Yeah, so there's tremendous opportunity. So philosophically speaking, you know, every agency, every individual in an agency has an opportunity for collaboration. And when I talk about collaboration, I mean collaboration from the sense of collaborating to make some positive change, not just to sit around and talk about things, but, but to really see things move forward. One of the areas that we're focused on at within VA, being in a healthcare environment, so I kind of have three aspects that I look at on the cybersecurity side of the house. I look at I have a privacy responsibility as it relates to information security. I have a security responsibility. Then I have a safety responsibility. So safety responsibility in the healthcare environment leads to most medical devices are network devices. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing worse than having you going under a gamma knife and it's infected
right.
with some kind of a piece of malware.
Yeah.
And so the way we have to change that is we have to collaborate with the medical device manufacturers, which we do. We sit on a consortium aboard with Kaiser Permanente, and then we have a number of device manufacturers that we work with, like the GEs of the world, to talk about building safety into, you know, from a cyber perspective,
sure.
into their product line.
Sure.
And it was difficult at first because for any private industry organization, it's all about bottom line, right?
Right.
If you can't produce ROI, what's
right.
the point of doing it? But we were amazed at the number of organizations that have stepped up and start looking at safety of their devices going forward from a cyber standpoint, because they realize that,
sure.
that they're basically just running a big computer system that sits on inside yeah. of a medical facility.
Yeah, and the more we do telemedicine and robotics and different the machines that are doing analysis of medical conditions and all, it's going to be important that you're getting the right information.
Yeah.
We only have about 10 minutes left, so we're going to shift over and talk about the future and where all this is going. You know, I used to ask the question, are we going to get in front of these issues, or is it going to take like a digital Pearl Harbor to wake us up? I mean, you know, what's your vision for the future? Let's start with Albert Kinney over at HP. Where's this all going? You know, what's your minute or so version of the future here, of how we're going to be looking? We need someday be able to be on the computer and not worry about threats and vulnerabilities?
Well, it's not that we won't be worried. It's that we'll know how to deal with it effectively, and we'll have the tools to manage that. We're going to be moving into the future, going from accounting for our systems and the security policies that are in those systems, and making that portion easy. And then we're going to go toward understanding the full posture of our systems, how they're deployed, how they could be deployed, what options we have in the face of the threats we face, including not only cybersecurity threats, but performance threats. And then we'll be able to optimize the operations of our enterprise by controlling cyberspace for cyber-dependent processes and be able to assign in a plannable fashion each of these assets to particular missions or business processes that are ongoing at the time. Moreover, we'll be able to understand in a human-computer interface that decision makers can use to actually control the missions that they have under their control, and make sure that they're happening the most effective way, and even prioritize and change things on the fly. Yeah. So, moving toward real time in cybersecurity is where we're headed.
Yeah, I think real time world we're going to be living in. David X, what's your minute or so version of the future here?
Sure. Well, I think that you're always going to have bad people wanting to do bad things to good people. And so really the best defense is a coordinated one. And if you have a community of like-minded people rallying around a common cause, that's going to really shore up your defenses. You look at the efforts that we've done with the NSA and other folks in industry, as well as government with the SCAP security guide, that's proven out. Where you have a community of people that are watching each other's backs. And I look at it as if you have a vibrant community, you have a lot of strength in numbers.
Yeah, terrific. Well said. I like that. Mark Orndorff, what do you see? What's your crystal ball look like? Where's this going? I mean, are we going to get ahead of this curve, or are we going to constantly be trying to catch up to technology?
Yeah, so I think one thing that we have to take as essentially a given is that a sophisticated cyber adversary is going to be part of our future. Mm-hmm. And planning for that and training for that is key, so that we go into military planning with the idea that we want to have assured mission execution in the face of a sophisticated cyber adversary. It doesn't mean all things have to work at all times. That means we have to understand what's mission critical, right, and the ability to adapt quickly to make sure that that mission is successful and that whatever is sacrificed is not key to the mission's success. So understanding that up front, planning it, exercising it, and being able, as was just mentioned, to quickly adapt on the network as cyber activity progresses is, I think, key to our future vision.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that awareness issue, too, to stay proactive so we don't get complacent. And the fact is, there are always, as both of you said, there's always going to be bad people out there, and there's going to be sophisticated threats out there that there are going to be. It's no longer just kids playing. It's sophisticated attacks. Ken Cartson, what's the future look like from your McAfee perspective? Where's this all going? What's it look like out there? Do you see the day when we can say, wow, we're done, we finished, we secured cyberspace?
That'd be great, and I think we'd be out of business then. But, actually, Mark's got it nail on the head. I mean, there's always going to be a different level of supremacy out there. We have a foreign adversary. They're going to leapfrog. We're going to leapfrog. The most important thing is to look at where technology is evolving and how do you safely secure new technologies that you didn't even envision a couple years ago. Right. One of the things, and if you look at the acquisition of McAfee by Intel, and where attacks are going, they're going further down the stack, and right, they're going at the hardware layer. So McAfee's ability to leverage the chip and integrate with the chip and provide hardware-assisted security today is where we firmly believe the market is going from a protection standpoint, as well as where our foreign adversaries are trying to go to, whether it's through the supply chain or anything else, in order to take advantage and leverage our assets.
Right. Terrific. Well said. The Brendan Good, what do you think? What's it look like down the road?
Yeah, I would echo a lot of the comments before, which is I think we've have become more sophisticated in our ability to react and to defend against the threats that are mm-hmm. coming at us. I think the improvements in the intergovernment dialogue and then the private public sector relationships have helped to improve from that standpoint. But technology platforms evolve, threats evolve, so we're always going to have to deal with a changing landscape. So how do you do that? I think the right thing is the discussion about building it into the technologies before it goes out there and reducing those vulnerabilities, making through public awareness campaigns the individual user much more intelligent and smart about how to secure their devices, protecting the organizations, providing tools and capabilities, especially in a resource-constrained environment. How do you enable them to do more to defend themselves? Right. And then there's that continued partnership across of the sharing. I think that ultimately provides a lot of the value. What we've learned and experienced in these different areas and what we're seeing, how can they be used to help each other?
Yeah, the sharing thing has been very encouraging doing this radio show, because over the years,
We've had DOD, DHS, Cyber Command, the various components of the DOD, components of DHS, and it just saw over time how people are beginning to talk more, work more, and recognize that the importance of doing that. Jerry Davis, VA, what's your crystal ball look like? Where's this all going? Are you going to get to a point where you can say, well, I think we're finally ahead of this curve?
Yeah, I think we're going to get to a point, as long as we have continue with, 50-plus years of bad software development, we're going to continue to have some issues, because we do have an adversary that's out there that's very capable and very motivated. But what the encouraging piece of it to me is we go back to the awareness aspect of it. And I was sitting there thinking about it. I know 5 years ago, if I wanted to go to a hotspot and use my Wi-Fi, I just sat in my own house because all my neighbors were running Wi-Fi wide open.
Right.
Today, you know, when you look out there, my neighbors are very smart about there. They're locking down wireless access points. They're getting smart about cybersecurity. So I'm encouraged from that perspective. But you're going to have compromises. And I believe at the end of the day, where we're going to have to continue to look for is how to be resilient, how to work through when you're in a degraded state and continue to move forward with your mission, as kind of what Mark said earlier,
right.
Is really what we're going to have to continue to focus on. As long as we keep building bad software, we're going to continue to have these issues. But being resilient and knowing how to work through compromised environments is where everybody's going to have to continue to focus on.
Yeah, see, we get that software build right, then you go back to my idea, we won't have to have the firewalls anymore because the software will be secure to begin with. Do you have a comment, Brendan?
No, I just like the analogy with the wireless hotspots and sitting in the house, people, and keeping them open and talking about the public awareness.
Right.
You know, we try to do something as simple as, the stop, think, connect.
Right.
You know, how do you get that ingrained in people's minds as they are using their devices in ways that it's like becomes a seatbelt in a car,
right.
It just becomes institutionally into you that, I will put that seatbelt on before I turn that car's into drive and go for it.
Sure.
Same thing. I think it gets down to the individual user as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many places you can go where there's a decent amount of folks around and you sign on to your wireless, you'll find like about seven networks there and, and about four of them are wide open. Jump on any one you want, And I like your point too, Jerry, about resiliency, because I think there is a recognition that things will happen. The question is, will we be resilient to respond quickly and get back to a steady state, which will be important things. With the last minute or two here, let me try to wrap up. As I always do, I jot down some notes of some key points that you're all making. The awareness issue came out early, and that a big part of dealing with this problem is creating the awareness that this is not something we can be complacent about. This is something we need to get out in front of. We got to get proactive. Awareness was also talked about in another vein, and that is situational awareness of knowing what's happening out there being key to getting things done. We all agreed that getting in front of the curve and proactive is going to be important. I know for years it seemed like the bad guys would wait for the good guys to come out with a solution, and that would be a challenge for the bad guys to beat the new solution. It was sort of a leapfrogging process that I think someone brought up here. Identity management was brought up a number of times as being a key, and I think we all nodded our heads. I was looking around the room that if you can really get that identity piece nailed down, then a lot of other things can fall into place fairly easy. Mobility, cloud, and big data came up as three of the areas where, not necessarily challenges, but awareness that there are issues that need to be addressed in those three areas, and they might be an opportunity to come up with some good cybersecurity solutions that can address those areas. Cost, we all know about the dollars and the economy and tight budgets and what's going on there, and the political system will figure that out hopefully over time. But clearly it's going to be one where you're going to have to make good decisions based upon what is the most cost effective. The threats constantly change. The workforce needs to be educated and needs to change as the threats change to keep up with those threats. The word agility came out a number of times in terms of being, you're going to have to be flexible here and be able to move quickly in different areas when you're living in a world of real time. And I think finally, when we were talking about some keys, I heard collaboration over and over again, that the government's not going to do it by themselves and industry's not going to do it by themselves. It's going to take a collaborative effort to get where we need to go. With that, I first want to thank our panelists here for taking time from their very, very busy schedules to come out and speak to us and be part of this show.
Thanks to our sponsors for sponsoring the show. Without you guys, we wouldn't have the show. And thanks to the great people here at Federal News Radio who also do such a great job. And most importantly, thanks to our listening audience out there in Radio Land. You've been listening to the Federal Executive Forum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the 2012 Federal Executive Forum series on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This show was produced by the Trezza Media Group and the Fleisig Group. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.